Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I am joined by Jenny Brentis of the Weekside Podcast. And Jenny, we are these playoff races, they're tightening. This is just an intense time in life, really.
It is intense in life. Great point, Gary.
There we go.
That's our opening.
That's the kind of opening banter that you all came here for. But we're going to start this one off. Usually we try and start off with the Sunday night game. I'll be honest, that Sunday night game was kind of it was good. There was some tension to it, but you kind of knew what the ending was going to be. So we are going to start with the upset of the day, and that was, of course, in Colt McCoy versus Russell Wilson 1. And Colt McCoy comes away with the victory in this one as the Giants go out to Seattle and pull off an upset. And I guess this is kind of the wild thing about the way the Giants won this game. Well, there's a wild thing, and then there's a thing that we should sort of recognize and admire. But the strange thing is, remember early in the year when Saquon Barkley was rushing for like negative 8 yards on 12 carries every game, and it was like, oh my goodness, how can you have a run game like this when you have Saquon, blah, blah, blah. And the conclusion here is not that Wayne Gallman and Alfred Morris combined are better than Saquon Barkley, but the Giants just kind of steamrolled the Seahawks defense in this game, and they did it with this run game that, you know, 2 months ago was completely hapless.
Yeah, this is quite a career resurgence for Alfred Morris, by the way. I mean, his career has taken a lot of twists and turns, and I would never have predicted that he would be leading a Giants team that has only recently seemed like it might actually be an interesting team to watch in the playoffs to a win on the road in Seattle. But here we are, and the Seattle defense's woes continue and really loom large over their hopes and dreams this season.
I know. It just kind of felt like, I mean, look, this game was 5-0 Seahawks at halftime after a late safety in the first half. And it was kind of like, you know what? Even the Seahawks defense just isn't going to give up points to Colt McCoy. And Colt McCoy he was Colt McCoy. He threw for 105 yards on 22 attempts, and that's just the way it went there. But yeah, it just ended up being this offensive line really steamrolled them. And Alfred Morris, so Gallman did most of the work. Gallman had 16 for 135. Alfred Morris is still the guy. I know he's on the team. Every week that I see his name or I see him on the field, I remember Alfred. But then I forget the upcoming week, and then it's like a fresh surprise every week when I see Alfred Morris out there, which is kind of a gift.
Yeah, I did not mean to undercut Wayne Gallman. It's just that Alfred Morris I have the same feeling every time I see him out there, Gary.
He did. He scored 2 touchdowns in the third quarter, which ended up being enough to separate this one. And, you know, I mean, look, we've sort of talked about what's becoming more of an up and down Seahawks offense here. And I think they're kind of scrambling away from the let Russ cook and trying to sort of find a compromise between that identity and the old identity of, okay, we're going to be run heavy and then get some play action shots off of it. But I do want to move away from the Seahawks stuff and just Patrick Graham's defense in New York. And for so many years, we kept looking at this defense and saying like, oh, you know, they should really try and recapture the old like Strahan, you and your Justin Tuck defense. They got to get some edge rushers. This is just not working, trying to do the kind of manufactured pass rush type of thing, but it's working. All of a sudden, this is a really good defense. They have been great over the last 5 or 6 weeks or so, and they were great in this one. And they really had Russell Wilson kind of questioning what he was seeing out there with some of their zone looks.
Yeah, Leonard Williams has really had a career resurgence this year, which has been interesting because the move was kind of questioned a little bit at the time, and he's really come into his own. He had 2.5 sacks, and you know, to see a Giants defense get 5 sacks on Russell Wilson, Wilson is not a quarterback that is easily sacked because he just kind of zooms around and gets out of things. So for the Giants to sack him 5 times is really a reflection. And I agree with you. I mean, I think what Patrick Graham has done this season is pretty impressive. And it is one of the reasons that the Giants are trending in the right direction. It took them a while to find their footing, but with a defense like that, that's something to build on.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point with Leonard Williams. I mean, sacks are not the end-all, be-all, but obviously they're important, and they tell, you know, part of the story at least. He had 2.5 in this win. He now has 8.5 in the year, which is a career high. He had half a sack last season combined in 15 games between the Giants and Jets. So, yeah. I mean, look, it's still a 5-7 team. So you don't want to say the world beaters. They have a good chance to win a historically bad division. So we won't go nuts. But, I mean, we were all kind of writing Dave Gettleman off and wondering who they would hire as the next general manager. And I'm not sitting here saying, okay, now Dave Gettleman is definitely the answer because they've gone on this little run. But you get a sense that this is, you know, kind of what he had in mind. Is he right? Maybe you can't claim that yet, but he's maybe trending toward being right when it's all said and done. I don't know.
Yeah, and you have a pretty good coach in Joe Judge, and if Joe Judge can work with Dave Gettleman, then it makes sense to stick with what you have. So I do think the way this season has turned has been a good thing for Gettleman, and I would be very interested to watch the Giants play in January. I mean, it's been hard for most of the season to think that any NFC East team would be a compelling playoff opponent. But at this point, I do think the Giants would be a compelling playoff opponent.
I mean, they are. And look, they're a half game up on Washington. The football team plays Monday evening. We are taping on Monday morning. But if they'll host a playoff game. I mean, they'll host the right now it would actually be the Seahawks if this was the way it was going to play out. So I don't know. And then we can talk about whether they put Colt McCoy back out there, since Colt McCoy has the secret formula for defeating Seattle.
But yeah, and I thought Albert Breer had a good note in his column this morning about how Colt McCoy had his own horrific injury that he had to come back for. And were it not for Alex Smith being so unfathomable and extreme, Colt McCoy's, we would have considered that way too. He also had multiple surgeries, and he and Alex Smith were next to each other in the hospital. And so he also has had a pretty remarkable comeback journey.
All right, let's go down to Nashville, where the Browns went down there to play the Titans, and we all kind of were scratching our heads about the Browns. Are they really this good? I mean, they smashed the Titans. This game got out of hand in the first half. I do want to highlight, it's silly to say in a game this lopsided that, you know, well, you know, one or two plays really turned it, but one or two plays kind of turned it early on. These are two teams that everyone wants to play with a lead. But these are teams that, especially because of the way their offenses are built, being so run-heavy and being so reliant on play-action being effective, that they don't want to fall behind and have that play-action become less effective because of game situation. So Sheldon Richardson made a 4th-and-1 stop on Derrick Henry early on to get the ball back. And then on the very next, Browns went down, scored a touchdown, very next offensive snap for the Titans, Sheldon Richardson strips Derrick Henry, forces a turnover, Browns go and score another touchdown. And all of a sudden, the Browns have this 17-0 lead, and it just never really got close after that. So, you know, this Browns defense might have some flaws ultimately, but Sheldon Richardson became a playmaker in this one. And then obviously this Browns offense just lit it up here.
Yeah, it was Baker Mayfield's best game quantitatively as well. It was his highest passer rating, and the kind of performance that we were wondering if he could deliver. I mean, there was this early excitement around Baker, and it's kind of been a slog since then, head coach changing, and this season he's been really up and down. But this was the kind of game that the Browns, despite their record and despite being in a good playoff spot, had not won. And so now they beat another team that is a contender. And you made the great points about how they were able to contain Henry. And normally Henry breaks off one of these 90 plus yard runs. Like, we have come to see this be a regular thing, that it's impossible to keep him down for the entire game. His longest run was only 10 yards. So that indicates just how good of a job the Browns did containing Henry, which was a huge difference in the game.
Yeah, this was a nightmare scenario for Derrick Henry, and it seems like this time of year we say every week, like, wow, Derrick Henry, another huge performance in the second half of the season, and nope, didn't play out in this one. This was, boy, just a really impressive win here for Cleveland, and obviously they now sit, you know, they're probably not going to catch the Steelers, but they're sitting there at 9-3. anything can happen down the stretch, but you feel pretty good about their playoff chances. And obviously with this win, win number 9, they clinched their first winning season since 2007. So just all kinds of good news for the Cleveland Browns. So good for them.
A winning season for the Cleveland Browns.
Who would have thought it?
2020 is really full of all surprises.
All right, Jenny, hold on for 1 second. It is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. As always, we are joined by Michael Fabiano of SI.com/fantasy and the SI Fantasy Podcast. And Fabs, we had a weird and wacky Sunday here as we go into the fantasy playoffs for most leagues. You know, it's up to everyone. But before we get into the early waiver wire, Sunday night, man, Tyreek Hill owners, I'm sorry about that.
That one probably cost some people a win and allowed others to go ahead and make the playoffs, right? Because that play is adding double-digit points to Tyreek Hill, who had an otherwise sort of meh game for him. I mean, he had two touchdowns that he had taken away. One was the incompletion. That was a catch. When was the last time you saw a wide receiver, especially an elite wide receiver, not think he caught the ball?
Yeah.
I don't think ever.
Yeah.
I can't figure out how he didn't know the ball didn't touch the ground.
You see Michael Thomas, like the ball will like two hop to him and Michael Thomas will still claim he caught it and want Sean Payton to challenge.
Right. So that was odd. It affected Mahomes too. Mahomes went from having like, you know, he would have had 24, 25. He had 19 to change, which is, I mean, it's all right, but for Mahomes, it's not great. So yeah, that was really weird. It was very strange. It was reminiscent of, do you remember the Antonio Freeman catch?
Yes.
I don't remember who it was. It might've been against Minnesota, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right.
But it was like that. Freeman got up and ran into the end zone. This was a little bit different in that Tyreek was already in the end zone. That one hurt. That's not going to be a pleasant memory for a lot of fantasy fans in what's been a very difficult 2020.
Well, let's stop looking at the past and let's move on to the future. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm setting up a Conan segment right here. let's go the early waiver wire and let's start with the running backs.
There's not much, dude. There's not much. In fact, Cam Akers is the guy I talked about last week as my top ad. And I wasn't comfortable saying that he was a start because they were still running all three backs sort of similarly in terms of the snaps. But Akers had a 32% touch share. He had a touchdown for the third straight game. He scored over 16 points. That's pretty good. And he's the best back they have. And it's taken McVay forever, a lot longer than we all hoped, although that's been the situation with some other rookie running backs like DeAndre Swift, for example. But Akers does have a tough matchup upcoming. They've got the Patriots, but still needs to be owned in every league. Right now he's not owned in enough leagues. We'll go from young to old. Adrian Peterson. I don't know if Swift's coming back this week. Peterson's got 4 touchdowns in his last 2 games. 4.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a great matchup coming up next. Right? Green Bay's not good against the run. So if Swift can't come back, like Peterson's on the flex radar. Right? I mean, can't age discriminate. The guy's scoring points. And then this one here, I mentioned Ty Johnson with one caveat. He plays for the Jets, okay, folks? And the Raiders suck. Their defense is bad against the run, like really bad. Like Ty Johnson looked like a good NFL player, and he's average, right? He had nearly 20 points against Las Vegas. Frank Gore, who's, what, 37, had a concussion. You would think maybe he's not going to be able to play in week 14. But the Jets have Seattle coming up next. And so is he worth an ad? Yeah, of course. But maybe in a 12 or 14 team league, maybe in a 10 team league, not as highly touted a selection. But game script could be a big problem for Ty Johnson if he starts for the Jets next week. But once again, coming off a big game, he's a running back. There's nothing out there. Go ahead. Not exactly a glowing review.
Yes.
But this is where we're at. It's week 14, folks.
A meek go ahead for Ty Johnson here. Let's do the quarterbacks here.
Here we've got some options. All right. Kirk Cousins, who I said to pick up last week, 20 plus points in 4 or 5 games. I remember when Minnesota, this happens every year. Like Minnesota has games where they don't throw it at all and people get down on Cousins. He has some stinkers. I remember earlier in the season, he had like a negative stat line and everyone was just, I can't start Kirk Cousins. He's been good. And now they're throwing the ball. 43 pass attempts again. I mean, all of a sudden the Vikings are throwing it all over the joint. They got the Buccaneers coming up. And you may look at the matchup and think, well, the Bucs defense is pretty tough. No, they not lately, not against quarterbacks lately. They've given up 20 plus points per game on average over the last three or four games. So Tampa Bay's, that could be a high scoring game too. I think DK Sportsbook has that at about a 52.5 over under to open. Mm-hmm. So Cousins is in the mix. Baker Mayfield, I was wrong about him, dude. Mayfield, four touchdowns in the first half. 30 fantasy points nearly in the game against the Titans, right? Six touchdowns in his last two games, no picks. Here's the caveat with Mayfield. He's got the Ravens coming up. You don't want that, okay? Mm-hmm. If you start Baker, it might not be until week 16 against the Jets. He's got the Giants. He's got two road games against New York teams in 15 and 16. And the Giants, their defense is suddenly playing pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Russell didn't do anything against them. So Mayfield's an add-in stash. Here's some other guys who could maybe help you this week. All right. Phillip Rivers has got the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Hurts could end up being the starter for the Eagles. Now, the matchup's not great, but something to keep an eye on. Tua Tagovailoa's got the Chiefs. That could be a high-scoring game. We're getting into two QB and Superflex folks here. Teddy Bridgewater's got the Broncos coming off a bye. And then Derek Carr, who I told everybody to start last week. It's a week-to-week league, folks. It really is. And he's got the Colts. It could be a high-scoring game. It's not a great matchup, though. So really, the big ads in terms of the dudes that you can play maybe this coming week, it's probably limited to Cousins and Rivers. But all the quarterbacks that I mentioned are worth a look at some point during the fantasy playoffs if you stream quarterbacks or play the matchups.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hit the receivers here.
Again, not much. T.Y. Hilton, what did I say? I said Houston, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, right? Like some guys just dominate certain teams, right? Remember like Pedro Martinez would say that the Yankees are his daddy. Oh, those were the good old days for my Yankees. Listen, man, the Texans are T.Y. Hilton's. He is their daddy. 11 catches, 110 yards, a touchdown, 25 fantasy points. He's averaging over 21 in the last 2 weeks. And he's got the Raiders coming up. It's the T.Y. Hilton resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
Kiki QT told you all to pick him up last week. 9 targets, 8 catches, 141, and a 24% target share. More than Brandon Cooks. Now, the matchup's not great this week against the Bears, but have you noticed? The Bears' defense has kind of looked like crap the last couple of weeks.
A little bit of doo-doo, yep.
I mean, Marvin Jones, oof. I mean, you can understand it against Green Bay, but, you know, no Kenny Galladay, and you let Stafford do that to you?
Mm-hmm.
That team is giving up, and Nagy's not going to have a job. After this year, Rashard Higgins for the Browns, 9 targets, 6 catches, over 21 fantasy points against the Titans. Last 2 weeks, he is second in target share among Browns wide receivers. Now, same situation as Baker. He's got the Ravens this week, so you don't want him.
Mm-hmm.
Giants, Jets after that. Some other wide receivers. This is more like deep league. I mean, Tim Patrick's maybe not deep league, 10 to 12 teams. Laviska Shenault, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Chad Hansen. But those are significant. I'm talking about really deep, deep leagues. There's nothing out there, folks. It is what it is. I mean, like, you know, you can go out in a non-competitive league and pick up a wide receiver who I didn't just mention, but most leagues right now are pretty competitive with the playoffs here.
And how about the tight ends, the bane of everyone's existence?
This one's bad too.
Yeah.
So Anthony Firkser would be the guy that I pick up first if I needed a tight end, right? He had 7 targets, he had 5 catches, 10 points against the Browns. I'll take 10 points from a tight end all day long. Jonnu Smith, I don't know if he's going to play coming up in week 14, but they got the Jags. That's a good matchup. Mm,
yeah.
So here's some others. Logan Thomas, who hasn't played yet this week. We're here on Monday. He's got the Niners next week. Gerald Everett had a pretty good game for the Rams, but, you know, it's thin. Dan Arnold had 2 touchdowns. Tyler Eifert has had 2 decent games in a row. Drew Sample's getting more targets.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Kmet had a touchdown. But this is where we're at, guys. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing on the waiver wire probably better than what you have on your roster at this point, you know, unless somebody goes down with an injury. Like, a lot of people got the Scroogey this week because of Mark Andrews. because he's not going to play. And, you know, you didn't have Gronkowski as well. So some people were looking for a tight end off the waiver wire, but it's very thin. And I would think right now, Fisk is probably the best option.
All right. Well, if you're heading to the playoffs, good luck to you. Michael Fabiano, always a pleasure to have you on the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. And if you want more Fabiano, I say it all the time, SI.com/fantasy, SI Fantasy Podcast. He is there all the time, 24/7. Can't miss him. Fabs, we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Go easy, my brother.
All right, we are back with Jenny Vrentas. And Jenny, we left off with the Browns, Titans, and sort of the positive for the Browns here. And the Titans obviously fall to 8-4, and they're still in good shape to make the postseason. But now it's a bit of a race for the AFC South because the Colts hold on down in Houston. They end up beating the Texans. This was a really strange game, and it doesn't really seem strange because, you know, there were no, wacky pick sixes or special teams plays or something. This game was 24-20 at halftime, and then the only points in the second half was a safety of Deshaun Watson. So Colts win it 26-20. This is kind of how the Colts are going to win games. You're just not going to go out and blow teams away. This was a little more interesting than they would have hoped. The Texans did have it down on the 2-yard line about to go in for a potentially game-winning touchdown when Deshaun Watson lost a fumble from the 2 on second and goal. So, I don't know. I know everyone wants the Colts to go out there and just destroy teams, but this is kind of their style. This is how they win.
Yeah, that's kind of been my hang-up with the Colts all season. It's really hard to have full confidence in them. The games are often pretty ugly, and they've had some big wins, of course, like beating the Packers, for instance. But they very easily could have lost this game, and were it not for what looked to be a bad snap from the center to Watson, the Texans would have been in position to win.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, look, it would have been interesting. The Colts probably would have had, they were out of timeouts. They probably would have had like a minute 20 left had the Texans scored a touchdown on that play. And then you're talking about, they just need a field goal at that point. So it would have been a chance for Phillip Rivers to come back. But hey, you know, no drama. I guess that's what makes you happy if you're the Colts at this point. Colts and Titans tied atop the AFC South. I believe the Titans have the tiebreak right now since they split it, but the Titans are 3-1 in the division. Colts are 2-2. So, that's our AFC South recap at this point. Let's go out to the Sunday night game, the Broncos and the Chiefs. And the Broncos are, they were a game with the Chiefs. And they played some weird games with the Chiefs the last two seasons. There was they played a snow game earlier this year where there were all kinds of like special teams gaffes by the Broncos that just sort of let the Chiefs pull away, even though Patrick Mahomes didn't have a particularly good game. Last year, they played a snow game in Kansas City where the Chiefs just smashed them. And then you had the Patrick Mahomes dislocated a knee game last season in Denver. It's always a strange time. This was kind of, I don't know, if you were hoping for offensive fireworks, you didn't quite get them. You just kind of got a Chiefs team hanging around, which probably stylistically is how the Broncos wanted to play this game. And then in the end, I don't know, it was just there for the Chiefs offense to keep the Broncos on the sideline and win it.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird game. You had Clyde Edwards-Helaire was active, but was not involved in the game. He'd been battling an illness all week. That was a big difference, I think. You had the Chiefs suddenly kind of stalling in the red zone and settling for field goals. You also had that bizarre play that Andy Reid admitted later probably was a touchdown to Tyreek Hill, but he said he's never had a receiver who made the catch not realize he made the catch. And it was sort of understandable why, because it was just one of the more fluky things in terms of the way the ball deflected and landed.
It was, I think that was the strangest play I've seen this season, just because not necessarily the play itself, but the way everyone reacted to it.
Yeah, I think that's true, because normally you have somebody who seems to know what happened, and no one seemed to know what happened.
That was the most breathtaking moment of the entire night when they cut away from the replay, and it was immediately like the snap was already being done by the Chiefs. Like, they were already punting the ball when you got back to the game, and everyone just like, no!
No, yeah.
That was pretty good. Yeah,
high
Chiefs. Chiefs. I mean, look, they had some issues in the red zone. I always say red zone is kind of a fluky, small sample size type of thing. I don't think you can read too much into it. And you know that you just don't put up a lot of points when you don't score in the red zone. So I think the important thing is, look, Vic Fangio punted the ball back with a little more than 6 minutes to go to the Chiefs and figured, you know, okay, we'll get another shot. And they didn't. I mean, the Broncos technically got the ball back with a minute to go and no timeouts left. But the Chiefs just went out there and put together a 5-minute drive, kicked a field goal, and that was kind of it. I mean, their offense just sort of does what it wants to do whenever it wants to do it.
Yeah, and there was the statistic that Mahomes now has 3 seasons in a row with 3,500 passing yards, 25 touchdowns, and 105 passer rating, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, obviously offenses are more prolific, but the fact that he's just been so consistent is really unlike anything we've seen. And so when you have a day when maybe you're not great in the red zone, to your earlier point, Gary, it's hard to read too much into that when he has just been so consistent.
All right. Consistency. Everyone thinks of the Eagles offense when they think of consistency at this point. So Packers-Eagles, the Packers win this game. It was not particularly close. It got a little close. And we can get into that a little bit. And I mean, look, I hate this quarterback controversy for a couple of reasons, and we can get into that too. But this game got a little bit close because you had Jalen Hurts, throw a long touchdown to put some points on the board, and then Jalen Reagor, the first round receiver who's really been struggling, he ran a punt back to suddenly close this to a one possession game, and then the Packers got a long Aaron Jones run, and that was kind of it. But all the buzz is about, okay, who are the Eagles going to start at quarterback this upcoming week? What do you do with Carson Wentz? Jalen Hurts went out there, and I just kind of want to make this clear. Jalen Hurts is a developmental quarterback. They knew that when they took him. We can talk about whether or not it made sense to take a developmental quarterback, especially when you're not really using him in terribly creative ways as the year goes forward. But this offense is also just, they don't do the basics well. So I'm not sure there's really a role for a Taysom Hillish type of guy in this offense anyway. But Jalen Hurts was not very good in this game. He did throw a touchdown pass. And so that is like, that's where the bar is. Like, we scored some points instead of no points. Therefore, let's make the quarterback switch. I don't think it makes a big difference here. I don't think Jalen Hurts is a huge upgrade or possibly an upgrade at all over Carson Wentz at this point. But mostly, I'm just worried about, this has been such a disjointed, just disaster of an offense for any quarterback to play in. You've seen what it's done to Carson Wentz this year, who was playing, you know, 2017, he was an MVP candidate. Last year, I mean, the end of last season, he was probably one of the top 10 quarterbacks in football. You see what playing in this, it's just meltdown of an offense is doing to him. So now you're going to do it to Jalen Hurts? Now you're going to put Jalen Hurts in this? Your developmental guy? I mean, you're going to ultimately ruin 2 quarterbacks this season.
Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago too, Gary, and just the idea that there's just so much going wrong. There's, you know, issues with play calling. There's issues with the quarterback play. There's issues with the skill position players. So just making one change isn't going to magically fix things. Now, Hurts did give them a spark when he went into the game. You know, it was a team that was just kind of yet again floundering, and mm-hmm. they made a change and it worked for a little while. But I agree that on the whole, there isn't going to be much of a difference this season because no matter who you play at quarterback, because the Eagles are just in such a bad spot on so many levels. And so the Eagles have given this contract to Wentz, you know, they have this money that's already invested. So, you know, that may end up being, at this point, it certainly looks like that's just lost financial money. But they have some big decisions to make of, like, with so many things going wrong, how do you get this team back on track?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people thrown out there like, oh, well, you have to address like O-line depth. And it's like, I don't know, O-line depth's kind of a luxury in this league. Like, no one, it's hard enough to find good offensive linemen. They have good offensive linemen. They did get hurt this year, but I'm not sure. I mean, are you going to spend a first-round pick on another offensive lineman here and possibly just have him as your number six guy if guys get hurt? Outside of improving the receiver position, I don't know if there's a glaring need in this offense. But the question is, okay, let's say everything is running as planned this year. They just, again, the number of times where guys just don't run the right plays or, clearly every other play, you know, whoever Carson Wentz is throwing to, he's not on the same page with on some of these option routes. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I would just, maybe you punt the ball on first down going forward and just see if you can force some turnovers.
Yeah, there's too many things going wrong, and certainly a lot of that does reflect on coaching. And I agree with you, Gary. It's just weird to see this team that looked like it was in position to contend for a while, especially because the NFC East is not a heavy-hitting division. You know, they had a player that looked like an MVP candidate. They won a Super Bowl. The roster looked pretty complete. And then to be in this position that they are in just a couple short years later is stunning. Also stunning was my use of the phrase financial money a few minutes ago, which I don't really know where that came from and what I was trying to say. So.
It's not, I don't know. It's not like it's not a person named Money. We are talking about finances, just to make that clear. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Let's just go. Wanted to acknowledge that because people are probably thinking I'm a moron and they rightfully should.
See, that's why you come on across from me, because no matter what you see or no matter what you say across from my stammering and misspeaking, you always sound okay.
Financial money.
Let's go out west to the Rams and the Cardinals. Rams, they once again take charge of the NFC West here. I think the takeaway from this game on the Rams side is you got a better version of Jared Goff, and maybe it's not the version of Jared Goff that you want for the contract you pay him and the year he's in and the offense that he's playing in. But this, I mean, you can more than live with if Jared Goff is going to put together an efficient performance that keeps this offense on the field. And I mean, look, they ended up possessing the ball for almost 39 minutes in this game.
Yeah, this is the way that you want the Rams to play. You can win games with Goff if he plays this way. They seem to be kind of finding a little bit more of a groove with the running game and Cam Akers. And the defense is just a really big part of this. I mean, you have been saying that the Rams are going to win this division for a while, Gary. I kind of got sucked into the Seahawks' hot start, and I still think, you know, there's a good chance they could as well. But the Rams that we saw in this game against the Cardinals and the Rams that beat the Seahawks, that looks like the team that will win the NFC West.
Been saying for a while, put your financial money on the Rams to win this division. Look, Cardinals side, Cardinals are in something of a tailspin. I mean, look, no, it's not something of a tailspin. It's a tailspin right now. They've lost three straight. I mean, if DeAndre Hopkins does not catch that Hail Mary, it would be five straight losses right now, and we'd be talking about, sounding sirens or something. I don't know what you do when you lose five straight and you were thought to be a playoff team, but they're sitting at 6-6. They are tied with the Vikings for the 7th seed in the NFC right now. But when you look at what's going wrong here, we knew the defense would slide back a little bit without Chandler Jones. I think the defense has played well. I think Vance Joseph has done a nice job with that group for the most part. Obviously they had a tough time getting off the field against the Rams here, but the offense is so much early in the season. It was Kyler Murray's ability to scramble and get a couple chunk runs every week that sort of was a difference maker for this offense. He hasn't done that in the last 3 weeks, and maybe it's a result of the shoulder injury. We're also seeing teams approach him a little bit differently as far as the pass rush goes. You really don't see guys running past him anymore. And look, he has rushed, let's see, this math is 15 carries, 61 yards over the last 3 weeks combined, a long run of 15 yards. He hasn't had a 10-yard run in two of those three games. That has kind of dried up, and you're seeing they just don't have much of an offense anymore without it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Gary, if you're looking for some sirens, there are plenty on my block. Just wait long enough, you will hear them. And I was thinking about the Hailbury, and sometimes when you see a play or a team have such an emotional play like that, it's very draining. We saw that with the Minneapolis Miracle. Am I getting the name right in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's what they call it, right?
That's the right name. I think so. But you make a better point. Were it not for that miraculous play, it would have been five straight losses. So rather than there being an emotional toll, I think the proper way to look at it is just they got a fluky win that game, and we probably thought they were better than they were. And I do think the adjustments that you pointed out, the way that teams are handling Murray, they have better game plans for containing him and not letting him move around and make plays off of that. And so I think we are seeing the impact of that. I still think they have a good chance to make the playoffs, but you know, they were really looking like a team that was, you know, one of the 2020 darlings, and that shine has kind of worn off a little bit.
Yeah, let's take a quick look at that sort of race for the 17 in the NFC. These were not beautiful games played in the NFC North in Week 13 here, but the Lions and the Bears, Daryl Bevel, interim head coach, gets a win here, so that's really nice for him. And the Lions go out there. Look, Mitchell Trubisky was... He was first, like, a straight week. I would call his overall performance acceptable. It was fine. And then, you know, he loses a fumble inside his own 10 when they're protecting a lead late in the game, and that's how this ends up getting away from the Bears. I mean, they are, you talk about tailspin, I mean, they have now lost, it's six straight, they are down to 5-7, but they're still only a game out in that 7 seed. The Lions are actually also only a game out for the 7 seed in the NFC, or in the NFC. What a horribly ironic world it would be if they fire Matt Patricia midseason and then make the playoffs anyway. But the other game here, the Vikings, boy, what an ugly, ugly game they play with the Jaguars. They end up forcing four turnovers in this game. Dan Bailey misses a couple of kicks, a couple of extra points, and a long field goal that would have won it in regulation. They end up going to overtime, and Dalvin Cook kind of grinded away and got him the win in this one. He had another Kirk Cousins pick six in this one. It's just... it's not terribly good football, but here are the Vikings sitting at 6-6, tied with the Cardinals. The 49ers, who play Monday night, again, we don't know what the result will be. If the 49ers upset the Bills, then you have the 49ers at 6-6 as well. And I don't know. I don't know what to make of this race here. If you had to pick one of these teams, is it still the Cardinals at this point?
I mean, I think the Cardinals are the best of those teams. I'm not entirely convinced by the Vikings because of games like the one we saw Sunday. But the Cardinals don't necessarily have an easy schedule. I mean, they have the Giants next week, suddenly resurgent Giants. Okay, mm-hmm. Then they have the Eagles, who are clearly struggling. Then they have the 49ers, which have a habit of pulling off tricky wins. And then they have the Rams. So other than the Eagles, those could be games that go either way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, you look at the Vikings, they still have to go to Tampa. They still have to go to New Orleans. They only have one home game left here against the Bears. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the seventh seed. I guess it's excitement, but it just seems like a bunch of teams that aren't terribly deserving battling it out for this, I don't know, this playoff spot, the right to go to Lambeau and get smashed, I guess. But
yeah, very anti-seven seed here.
But now we get to move into the conspiracy theory part of the show. And that is the Raiders and the Jets. And the Raiders win it, and the Jets lose another game. The Jets are still winless. They are still the front runners in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. And again, this, by the way, is the problem with the rookie wage scale. Is it's not just you get Trevor Lawrence. It's you get Trevor Lawrence on about 25% of what his market value is for the first three seasons of his career. It is a really dumb system. And it entices teams to perhaps do things like this, which was, oh my goodness. I mean, the Jets are protecting a four-point lead with 20 seconds left. The Raiders have no timeouts. So the Raiders need a touchdown. That's how math works. You get 3 points for a field goal. That would have led to a one-point loss for the Raiders. So the Raiders need a touchdown. The Jets end up just sending seven in the pass rush on back-to-back plays. And the first one, Nelson Agholor runs behind the defense and is wide open for a touchdown. Derek Carr overshoots him. Then on the next play, the Jets send all these rushers again, and it's Henry Ruggs against Lamar Jackson. And with all due respect to Lamar Jackson, I think he ran like a 4.65 40 at the combine, and you have Henry Ruggs, who maybe outside of Tyreek Hill is the fastest receiver in the league, and he's just out there on an island about him. He's out there on an island with him. I can't even talk. I'm so fired about this play. And he just, Lamar Jackson, like, stops his feet for a double move. And it's like, one, why is this the matchup? Why does he have no safety help? Number two, why is he playing this as if, a 10-yard gain is something he needs to defend against? So, of course, Ruggs just runs by him, and it's a free touchdown here for the Raiders. And, you've written about this, Jenny. You wrote about the Dolphins early last season and the sort of front office's perhaps cynical approach to the 2019 season. But, you know, people say all the time, it's the front offices that sort of do the tanking. It's not the players. It's not the coaches. They're out there trying to win. But you see this play out, and it's kind of like, I don't know. Did you guys try to win? I'm not entirely convinced.
I think this was what Greg Williams thought was trying to win. I think you said it well, Gary, that players and coaches don't tank for a lot of different reasons, but largely it's pride. No one wants to have a stain on their record of having been part of an 0-16 season. I think this was just representative of one of the biggest problems that there is in coaching right now, is coaches thinking they know best, trying to get too cute, trying to just say, hey, I'm going to do a blitz in this situation, despite the fact that it makes absolutely no sense, right? They just kind of outsmart themselves. That's exactly what happened here, because knowing the situation, all you had to do was protect the sidelines and protect the end zone, and the clock would run out and you would win. But instead, he gets really cutesy and tries to dial up some blitz. I don't really know for what purpose. I mean, nothing is saving the reputation of anybody on the Jets coaching staff at this point in time. So even if the call had worked, I don't think he would have been getting widespread acclaim. But it ended up being a really dumb call that the players after the game called out. They were saying that it was a bad call. And they were put in a bad position because they were. So this is really just what a season for the Jets. And this really summed it up, I think. It's just bad coaching that puts players, a roster that is devoid of talent in key areas, in even worse positions than they might otherwise have been.
I wonder if Trevor Lawrence was watching these games because you had the Jaguars and Vikings were tied at this moment when the Raiders retook the lead and they were obviously heading to overtime. But I wonder if he watched these games or just is just kind of like, oh, I guess I should pay attention because, you know, I'll find out where I am going to live for the next 5 years of my life, at least.
Yeah. And imagine looking at those teams and coming from Clemson and saying, wow, I'm going to be going to a team that hasn't won in a while.
Boy.
It's pretty bleak.
It was something. I couldn't. It's hyperbole to say I couldn't believe it when you watch football. Like, oh, I couldn't believe that play. After Agholor got behind them on the previous play, it was like, oh, well, clearly they are going to, that this can't happen on back-to-back plays. That would be madness. And it did. It happened even worse on the second play, actually. And again, Lamar Jackson is a guy who will probably spend his career on the fringe of NFL rosters. I hope he has a long and productive career with the Jets, but I don't think he's quite that kind of guy. So he's not going out there to be like, oh, maybe I'll just give up this touchdown and help the team out for the long term. I mean, it was again, I literally cannot believe that this
that was
happened.
The call.
All right, well, let's go down to Miami. Dolphins, Bengals. Dolphins win this one. Dolphins are still right there in the projected playoff field. And by the way, Dolphins and Raiders play in week 16 in Vegas. So that one will be potentially a big impact game there. The Raiders are a game out of the playoff picture right now in the AFC. But Dolphins go down to Cincinnati. This one was it was interesting because it was a really chippy game, and you had sort of a big, you know, maybe not quite a total breakout brawl here, but Jakeem Grant, the Dolphins return specialist and receiver, he got cheap shotted twice. It was either cheap or it was just incredibly reckless. The Dolphins did not appreciate it the second time. You know, a lot of you have seen the clip of Brian Flores coming across the field and looking like he was kind of ready to go at that point. So that was a little bit strange, but I think as far as the impact, long-term impact goes, Tua Tagovailoa struggled in the first half. He did have Grant drop what would have been a long touchdown, and maybe that would have made everyone feel a little better about it. But it was a dicey first half for Tua, and it was kind of everyone was thinking at halftime, like, is this going to be another Ryan Fitzpatrick relief appearance? Because the Dolphins were trailing a little bit longer than you'd like to be trailing against a Brandon Allen-led Bengals team. And of course, Tua sort of righted the ship in the second half, and it was all right. But this one was, there was some hand-wringing going on.
Yeah, definitely. He had the thumb wrist injuries, and it just looked like a player that was kind of coming off an injury, maybe hadn't practiced a ton this week, and took a while to get into the groove. But after halftime, he was a lot better. I know they used the up-tempo offense that seemed to kind of kick things into gear. So this ultimately is a team that's led by their defense, and you just kind of want Tua to kind of continue making progress. I think it's been a little bumpier than maybe we thought initially. As you mentioned, that's going to be a huge game in Vegas to decide playoffs spots in the AFC.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was just 7-6 Bengals at halftime, and it was just kind of like, no, this can't happen, can it? This was the second straight week that the Bengals got doubled up in offensive yardage in a game, and that's the team they are right now. Let's go down to Atlanta, where all I really want to say, this one played out similarly to the last Saints-Falcons matchup, Taysom Hill's first start, where the Saints sort of just got a lead and just kind of held on. The Falcons did have a shot late in this game, so it was a little more interesting. But Taysom Hill is now 3-0 as a starter. Look, it's going to be Drew Brees' team once he's ready to go again. But the Saints are now, they are 8-0 without Drew Brees over the last two seasons. Teddy Bridgewater went 5-0 a year ago, and Taysom Hill 3-0. So just kind of a testament to, it's a very good team overall, very good team from 1 to 53. And Sean Payton is just kind of a good coach, I guess.
Yeah, indicates an ability to game plan for different quarterbacks, to get your backups ready to play in the game, to create a game plan that accentuates their strengths. And the backups have all been different styles of players. So he's really done a lot to bring in different quarterbacks and not have there be a drop off from Drew Brees, which bodes well for the post Drew Brees era.
It was also, and I was shocked when they said this, Taysom Hill threw his first career touchdown pass in this game, which, I mean, I didn't think he had a ton, but I was really surprised that it was his first one. So, good things continue to happen in New Orleans, where they have won 9 straight, and right now they're still hanging on to that that number one seed in the NFC, and they do not have, they lost to the Packers early this year. So should those teams end up in a tie, the Packers actually get the tie break. So the Saints have to hang on at this point. And the final game of Sunday, look, any of you who listen to the MMQB Gambling Podcast on Friday with myself and Jimmy Traina and Mitch Goldich, it is critically acclaimed. You heard me say something along the lines of how the Chargers are really, in the end, they're better than the Patriots. The reason that you might say the Patriots are better is because the Chargers are so bad in special teams, but you can't bank week to week on a team's special teams being bad. It's a small sample size. I mean, you know, most weeks you just have a bunch of a bunch of fair catches and stuff like that, and you won't think twice about special teams. And boy, was I incorrect about that in this particular game. The Patriots get a 70-yard punt return in the first half. They also get a blocked field goal to end the first half that they run back for a touchdown. And then Michael Badgley also missed another kick in the first half. So that kind of set the tone for this one. And it ends up being a 45-0 Patriots victory. And that's, I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that, except for the fact that the Patriots were actually really good defensively again in this one. Justin Herbert, his worst game as a pro. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of these Chargers special teams anymore. I don't think I can. I think I'm just going to turn off the TV when they're punting or lining up for a field goal from now on.
Yeah, and obviously they changed the special teams coordinator a few weeks ago, but still have woes in that area. They're just the Chargers just having another Chargers season where there's just been a lot of things going wrong. Despite the bright spots, they just seem to have, you know, bad news bears type of thing. And this was just a strange game. Cam Newton threw 69 passing yards and they win 45-0. I mean, it's just kind of wild, Gary. But I agree with you about the Patriots defense. And this is really in Belichick's wheelhouse, right? To come up with a really smart game plan for a rookie quarterback that's been surprising a lot of other teams. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was look, we thought the Patriots were going to win games in this fashion this season, but this has sort of been to the extreme the last 2 weeks here. And look, they are now they're right there. They're 6-6. They're two games out of the playoffs. They probably don't quite get there, but it's just kind of a really impressive season. And they're going to get a bunch of dudes back next year, and you know, they'll have a chance to sort of rebuild things a little bit. And I don't know. This was, at the same time, a disappointing and an encouraging season in Foxborough.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's been a little bit of both. And, you know, then they have a dominating performance like this, and you're kind of like, all right, you know, this has been not so bad of a season.
All right, Jenny. We will hear you on the Weekside podcast. If you don't already subscribe, please do, everyone out there. And then you and I will be back next Monday for recapping week 14.
Can't wait to talk about how we spent our financial money over the next week.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Brentis and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed, as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.